Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard that Canada's vaccine rollout is not going so quickly, at least compared to many of our peer countries. Vaccines began arriving in December, and now as we approach mid-March, most provinces are still struggling just to get Canadians over 80 vaccinated. This is more a reality than a true failure. We don't manufacture any vaccines here, so we have to rely on it becoming available elsewhere and buying it and waiting for it. And the vaccines are coming. It's just been slow so far. Either way, if you're a healthy 40-something in a big city, you're looking at maybe June at best, and probably more like sometime later in the summer before you get your shot. But that's not true everywhere in Canada. In some of Canada's most northern communities, there is a little noticed vaccine success story to report. If you live up north in Iqaluit or Yellowknife or other smaller and even more remote locations, you're already seeing your middle-aged friends taking vaccine selfies every day. In larger communities, vaccines are reaching people in their 40s right now. And in smaller northern communities, everyone over 18 has already been offered the vaccine. Yes, it might make some of us envious, but it's also worth noting. These are communities that are hard to reach. They are places where health resources are scarce and where COVID outbreaks can spread like wildfire. So what had to happen for this to go so well? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Kent Driscoll is a reporter and videographer for APTN National News. He is based in Iqaluit, Nunavut. Hello, Kent.
Hello, Jordan.
I wanted to talk to you about some good news from up north. And for you, and probably many people you know personally, we reached out to you because you were the first regular guest of The Big Story that posted about getting vaccinated. Congratulations.
Ah, well, thank you. Congratulations are probably more due to the federal government and the territorial government and our very, very hardworking public health nurses. But yeah, as soon as I was offered an opportunity, I put it in my arm.
This is why we're talking, because we're going to get into the details of an extremely complicated logistical challenge that both governments seem to have met really well. But maybe first, just describe the experience of getting your shot and how you qualified and where it was and what it was like.
Well, the way I qualified was here in Iqaluit, the way they were doing it was first they went with anyone who was 60 and over and people who were staying at the homeless shelters. And then they went priority two, healthcare workers, first responders, medevac flight crews, residents of group homes, mental health center, and people in correctional facilities. I came in on priority three. Starting March 1st, they made it so anyone who was 45 and older could get it. And I was just old enough. Now, I'm going to talk about how sort of weird it is to be getting it. My partner, she is five months too young to qualify for this.
Oof.
So I'm the only member of our family who has been vaccinated. But as far as the news team goes, my two buddies in Yellowknife, Colin Crozier and Charlotte Moore Jacobs, they both got theirs on Friday because the NWT declared media as essential workers. So they were able to go get theirs. And then again, when you go over to the Yukon, our other Northern Bureau, they've now made it for everyone who's 18 plus. So there's a real good chance we're going to have all three of our northern bureaus vaccinated before the end of the week.
So tell me how that happens and how the rollout has been such a success up there. Because I think that there's a lot of people in Toronto and Vancouver and Montreal listening to this right now being like, how? We're still working on 70, 80 plus.
I have family in Prince Edward Island, and there many of them are still waiting for their vaccines as well. The reason, of course, is that the federal government identified remote communities as being a very high priority, because if we had an outbreak here, like we are currently having in Arviat, Nunavut, it spreads like wildfire due to all the conditions in the north. Overcrowding, for example. If you've got 11 people in a two-bedroom, one person gets COVID, they're all going to get COVID. So it was identified as a priority really early on. And the feds have seemed to have come through on it. I'm looking here at the stats. Right now, 12 of Nunavut's communities, everyone who wants it has had two doses. There's 9 more Nunavut communities where they've got one dose of Moderna, and they're waiting to get their second by the end of the month. There's 3 communities that haven't had it yet, but if you're looking at the numbers, over 9,000 have received their first dose. And the goal of the government here has been they want 75% of all adults in Nunavut to take that vaccine. Well, there's roughly over 20,000 people over 18 in Nunavut, and it was a matter of us being declared a priority and the government and those public health nurses getting to those small communities. And what they do is when they go to a smaller community, they'll go in for 2 days. They show up with a whole health team set up in the school gym or some other large area and just bring through everyone who wants it.
It's really fascinating to hear how that works differently from the way it does down here. And we've spoken before about how all sorts of things, especially as it pertains to healthcare, are different up north. And so tell me about some of the challenges that had to be overcome to make this rollout a success up there.
Well, you got to remember there's 25 different communities and each one's a fly-in community. So, and then we only have one actual hospital in the territory, and that's here in Iqaluit. And there's some larger regional health centers in Rankin Inlet and Cambridge Bay. But you're basically flying into a small, tiny health center that usually staffs a couple of nurses and putting on a full vaccination campaign. So we've got nurses who have been flying all over the territory since the beginning of this year, just showing up, putting needles in arms, getting back on a plane and going to the next community, and then circling around again about a month later for that second shot. So it's been a real logistical victory, I have to say, for the government of Nunavut. They said they were going to have it done by the end of March, and it's looking like it's going to be done at the end of March.
What about the stability of those vaccines and getting those to the communities? Because when I pictured, before our chat, what would be one of the big challenges is, a lot of those vaccines have to be in super cold temperatures. They can't handle a lot of bumpy rides, and that's how I picture them getting up there.
The logistical challenges are pretty huge. That's why we couldn't use the Pfizer vaccine. Despite it being very cold here, we didn't have the medical deep freezers that we needed in order to use Pfizer, and then you've got to take it to small communities. It's a bigger problem. So that's why they went with Moderna, just to remove some of those logistical challenges. But these are challenges the government of Nunavut Health Department faces every day. I mean, we have 25 communities, and they're only available by airplane. You've got a group that's familiar with the challenges, but then they put a lot of resources, especially over the holidays. They knew before Christmas, they knew when the vaccines were going to be rolling in. We got our first order sometime, I think it was the 23rd. It was right before Christmas. So they put a lot of work in over the holiday getting ready to launch this. And from everything I've seen in the small communities, it's been very successful. They set up in the gym. They keep people socially distanced. And then there's been some incentives in some small communities. In Arviat, for example, the local community council did a raffle. You got your vaccine. You got your name in for a raffle, and you could win $5,000.
That's a great idea.
It sounds like a lot of money for that, but then you got to look at Arviat. I mean, $5,000 wouldn't be third place in their fishing derby. If you're going to put out a prize, you better put out one that the community is going to want, right? So, and that worked very well. And there was a lot of fear at the beginning, like as many people had. And you see all the crap posting on Facebook about how, oh no, look, my cousin got that vaccine and their arm blew up 3 times the size. But now that it's rolled out throughout the territory and enough people have seen their friends and neighbors get that vaccine, I'm seeing a real drop in the amount of online garbage about the vaccine that I've been seeing. So, Nunavumiut are doing their part as well as the government for getting it out there.
That's really interesting. And that was on my list of questions to ask you, which is that, you know, people who historically have had not great experiences with the medical industry and with government-provided medicine, which would include a lot of Indigenous Canadians, tend to be more vaccine hesitant. And I guess you're not seeing that up there.
There was a lot at the beginning, but the government has been relentless in their campaign to try and convince people that it's safe. And especially like in Irvine, where they still have cases, they're doing things now like taking photos of elders at the elders' home behind glass saying she wants to go see her grandkids, take your needle, stuff like that. So the communications on behalf of the government, they've really ramped up, but it's more people are seeing that people throughout the world have got this vaccine and there have not been adverse effects. So people are more comfortable with it. People were uncomfortable with it when it was new, but we're not seeing that here as much as we did early on.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
I guess one of the advantages to being a group of small communities is that the problems of scale don't apply up there, right? You don't have to bring enough to vaccinate a big city. You can fly it up for a community in a plane.
Exactly. You can go and they have a very good idea how many people in the community will want it. You get your appointment in advance. And from talking with our chief public health officer, this is right when the vaccine campaign started, I asked him about this, like what percentage of it is being wasted? And they say, he was telling me that at that point, they allow for 5%. That's what their wiggle room is. And they've managed to stay well underneath that. So it's been, a fairly successful rollout by all accounts.
I know the situations are grossly different. And, you know, I mentioned the scale problem. Hopefully that's something that the federal government's overcoming with its new shipments. But what do you think the rest of Canada could learn from communities that have been so successful, you know, as soon as supply is available, getting it into arms and getting to that 75% mark?
Well, for Nunavut, it was a life or death issue. I mean, if we've all seen what happened in Irvine, we've had over 300 cases now throughout this pandemic, and the vast majority of them have been in that one community because of all the other factors, because of the overcrowding. So, and they say there's no community transmission in Irvine, but that's a technical word, right? What's happening is people who live in the same residence are catching it from each other. Because if you have 11 people in a 2-bedroom, you're going to catch COVID if one person has it. But that they don't count that as community spread. So I think the reason Nunavummiut are taking it up is because we've seen now, Irvine's been locked down since before Christmas. They are having a real rough time getting rid of the remnants of that virus in that community. And we've all seen it. And we all have a lot of empathy for them. So if you can take a needle and ideally spare someone else having to go through that, most Nunavummiut seem to be game for it.
As the communities get close to 75% vaccinated, are any of the politicians up there, any of the city councils, giving you an idea of what it will look like to get back to normal when you've hit that threshold? Like, do you have plans? Do you already have things you're looking forward to that you know are about to open up again?
They're being very reluctant to say that sort of thing yet because, as the chief public health officer keeps pointing out, we know the vaccine will stop the symptoms of COVID-19, but it's still not really clear whether it would stop you from having it and being an asymptomatic carrier. So they're really being reluctant to sort of put out any sort of roadmap about a return to normalcy. But normal's pretty normal here. I mean, the movie theater's open again. The kids are playing sports. I haven't been able to go watch my kids play basketball this season, but they're playing basketball twice a week. Same with hockey. The kids are all playing hockey again. The pool is open in limited ways. So the effect here, because we've done so well at keeping it out of Iqaluit, means that we haven't lost out as much as a southern jurisdiction that had been on a firmer lockdown for a longer amount of time might have.
So one of the last things I want to ask you, and I know the last time we spoke, you guys hadn't had a single case, and we talked about the bubble, and then the bubble burst instantly, so we had to talk again. I don't want to jinx you again, but what could still go wrong here when you say politicians are hesitant about opening up? You know, what is the worry, if there is one? And if there's not, great.
The worry is an outbreak in another community. Because what we've seen in Irvine, right now there's 23 active cases and they're all in Irvine. And we've seen what that community has gone through. Like, they're tired. Like their MLA, one of their MLAs, John Main. The other MLA, incidentally, from Irvine is the premier. So he's got a very very personal stake in this as well. And but the other MLA there, John Main, he's at the point now where he's openly wondering, can we get Doctors Without Borders? Can we get the Red Cross? Can we get the armed forces? Like, what can you send us? We're in trouble here. And then the mayor of Arviat, Joe Jr., Joseph Ikita, premier of Nunavut, MLA for Arviat. The mayor for Arviat is his son, Joe Jr. These are very small towns.
Right.
And Mayor Joe Jr. put in a state of emergency in Arviat, where they've got their municipal enforcement officers patrolling between 10 o'clock at night and 6 in the morning to try and keep people from socializing and going to visit other people or their shacks people go to party and smoke and that sort of stuff. And they've been trying to crack down on that. And they're tired, too. So, like, when you see people you know, I listen to John. I've known John for a decade. He was a CBC reporter here in Iqaluit before he moved back to Arviat and started working for the government. I know John. I interviewed him last week, and my guy sounded tired. It has been a long road there. So the thing keeping the rest of us in line is we can just look over at Arviat and see how bad it would be if it got into our community. And Arviat has a serious overcrowding issue. But so do many, many Nunavut communities. If it got into another community on the scale that it has in Arviat, there's only so many of those responses the government's health department could handle at once. I mean, two or three communities with it, they think they've got a handle. If it gets any more than that, we're into some real scarcity of resources there. So, you know, watching it happen in Arviat, it's pretty close to home.
What happens in Arviat when an outbreak like that occurs? You know, how taxed does the system get? And, you know, you mentioned calling for Doctors Without Borders or other assistance. What resources do they have to kind of corral it on the ground?
At the very beginning of the outbreak in Arviat, they brought in the Red Cross to help with contact tracing, and they did some of that. But the rest of the resources have all been basically internal. We've got, there was a doctor who was there when the outbreak started and was scheduled to leave and ended up adding a few months to his term so that he could help get Arviat through the first part of that that crisis. And then we've got public health nurses, and there's a decent-sized nursing station in Arviat. But the thing they want there, and the thing that they're not getting, and the thing that you keep hearing from Arviamute, there's no other spot in town for someone who had COVID to go isolate. Hmm. So if you're the only person in your house that has COVID-19, you have to stay in your home, exposing how many other people are there. What they would love would be a place in the community where you could go when you had COVID until you recover so that you don't infect the other people in your house. And if it was that easy to find other beds in Arviat, we wouldn't have that big a overcrowding problem, right? They're making do with what they have there, but that is the one thing I keep hearing from people from Arviat. They would love a place to just let people ride it out and then go home and not spread it again.
Last question then, has everybody in that community who wants one had a vaccine? Because theoretically, at least, that would mean that as they start to take effect, the outbreak might die down to embers, no?
They had their second doses in Arviat by, I think it was end of February. I was looking at those numbers this morning. And yeah, so no, everyone who wanted the vaccine in Arviat has got it. And it's hard to tell how many because the government won't release the per community totals for vaccine uptake. They'll only do the territorial number. Mm. So there's no way to really tell which community really embraced it. But I've seen all sorts of photos from Arviat of, seems like the thing that everyone in Nunavut is doing now is taking a selfie with the needle going into your arm. I've seen 100 in the last month of people just, everyone gets that one shot where they're getting the needle in the arm and the smiling face behind the mask. And that's it's if you look on Nunavut Facebook anywhere.
Yeah, you got yours. That's why we're having this conversation.
Well, that's because everything I do is file footage, right?
Right, of course.
I shot that video so that the next time I got to talk about the vaccine, I have some pictures for it. I mean, but like that's nothing new for me. I had a tuberculosis test on camera. I got a flu shot on camera because the commissioner guilted me into it. Getting medical procedures on camera is nothing new for me.
The life of the lone journalist in a community, or at least the lone APTN journalist in a community. Kent, thanks so much for doing this. I'm so glad that you have the vaccine and hopefully everyone in your community has it soon.
Yeah, second dose at the end of the month. From my point of view, it's go get it.
Kent Driscoll of APTN National News. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. I'm going to bug you again, as I always do, to take our survey. I'll stop doing it in a week or so, I promise, after enough of you take it. You can head to the website, click the Take Survey link, and do what it says. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can email us anytime, TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. And you can follow us in any podcast player you prefer, whether that's Apple or Stitcher or Spotify or Google or on your Alexa device or in Pocket Casts or Overcast. I could go on. We're in all of them. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.